Hello, everyone. Good evening. Welcome to Guns and Yellow Ribbons. As you can probably tell by the accent, it's Hillsy at the controls tonight, so anything could happen. Our very good friend is otherwise engaged tonight. He's not feeling very well. Nothing to worry about, and he'll be back next week. So we're going to see how it goes, and please, just bear with us, yeah?
Get ready for the world's greatest Arsenal podcast. Welcome to another podcast by Guns and Yellow Ribbons. Enjoy the show.
Do just think to yourselves a minute. Here we go. Hello, boys. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Guns and Yellow Ribbons. Fergus wasn't going to be with us, but as you can see, he's just popped up. But behind there is a much better looking fella in our Dan. And Del and Danish Gooner Alex are joining us. We're going to talk about the Wolves game at the weekend. Then we're going to look forward to tomorrow night. We're going to talk about the Forest tweet. We're going to talk about offside. Is it offside? Use of technology? Who knows? But we're going to start with a Wolves game. So I'm going to let Alex lead us in from here. Alex, where are we starting, son?
Well, I think that we start off with the lineups. 8 out of 11 players started from the Bayern game. Then we had 3 changes. Kivior, Jesus, Trossard came on for Jorginho, Tomiyasu and Martinelli. So Havertz moved down a bit into midfield and Jesus led the line. Boys, what was your thoughts on Havertz dropping down a bit and having Jesus up top?
Well, you see, the thing is, Alex, right? I'm in the mood at the moment that he can probably pick 11 from 14 and I'm not unhappy. Maybe 15 and I'm not unhappy, right? I don't like to see Havertz playing deep. I like to see him further up the field, but we've had my views on that before. What's your view on it, Dan?
Well, I'm unhappy, Trev, but I'm unhappy because at least Fergus asked how we are before we jump into it.
Yeah, well, I know you're all right. So if you start, I'm just cutting you off, Dan. It's all over. You're done. See you later. You're done with.
Well, for anyone that cares, I'm good, thanks. Good, thanks, lads.
And Dan was the only one who went to the game, actually.
Yeah, I know exactly, Fergus. Manners. I don't praise Fergus for many things, but it's probably not really for manners. But for that, he does. Missing you already, Ferg.
Are you done?
I am.
Right, anyway.
To be honest, the lineup. I'm not surprised there was a little bit of a change there, to be honest. Obviously, after midweek, I think a lot of effort put in travelling abroad. And I think a little bit with tomorrow's game in mind as well, I expect to see Martinelli back in. Although, having said that, Trossard's goal, big goal. And he seems to score big goals in big games. But I'm going to take credit and the assist for that goal because he scored 1 minute after I said I'd get him off at half-time and bring Martinelli on. So you're welcome, lad.
Dale?
Yeah, I think the changes are always positive. They need to happen with such a large number of games and such a short space of time. I think, in fact, this week's our biggest break, isn't it? We play tomorrow and then on Sunday. I think that's our biggest break we've had all month. So I think we needed to have some changes. The Havertz one, I think we're all a little bit surprised by that. He's a better player further forward he plays. But that being said, I don't think he had a bad game.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, to be honest with you, I think that I was more worried about how Wolves were going to play rather than how the Arsenal were going to play, because I know we'd have turned up. And the Wolves have pulled off some surprisingly good results this year, haven't they? They've won some good away games and they've beat big teams at home. So I just had my fingers crossed that we'd keep it all together and pull off the win. So, boys, you know me, boys, I don't know anything about any other team than the Arsenal. So, Alex, take us through that lineup, mate.
Yeah, they had Sarr in goal, Doherty, Bueno, Kilman, Totti, another Bueno, not brothers apparently, Gomez, Traore, Doyle, Chirewa making his full debut for the team, and then Hwang So obviously they had a lot of key players missing, the likes of Pedro Neto. Both their fullbacks, Eid Nouri and Semedo, were missing as well. Quite a depleted Wolves team. But I mean, looking at their squad, they've still got some good players. But I mean, the expectations were, of course, I think for all of us, that this was a must-win game against a Wolves team without many injuries.
Yeah, absolutely agree. People, just to let you people out there know, I've actually, Fergus has written me some notes tonight to keep me ticking over. But what you got to remember is Fergus writes his notes in the same way as he speaks. So it's taking me a minute to fathom out.
And he's dyslexic as well.
Yeah. But I thought we started really well. I wasn't unhappy with the way we started at all. And what did you feel in the ground, Dan? Because I honestly thought we started okay.
To be honest, I was quite happy, and it was a little bit similar to the Bayern game. I thought we started the first 10 minutes well. We were knocking the ball about. I felt like we was in control. But credit where it's due, that home crowd was really, really good. And their home end is a brilliant home end and a brilliant set of fans. So sometimes credit where it's due. They were loud. They got behind their team. And I think that helped pick them up a bit as well. But we dug in where needed. We had that one moment where we had the save from Raya that pushed it onto the bar. But all in all, I thought quite an even first half, if I'm totally honest.
Did you, Dan, can I ask a question about the away end, if you don't mind me asking?
Hey, listen, you'll talk when the governor tells you can talk, young man. Right, sir. Do you want to ask a question then, Dal?
Oh, thank you, sir. So, Dan, I've seen a few comments on Twitter saying Wolves is always a tough away crowd. I mean, I've never been to Wolves away. Do you find that yourself? Is that something you experienced and you felt, or would you say it was the same usual buoyant away fans?
It is a little, because you get the long side of the pitch there. Having said that, last year's away end was a lot better than this year's. So it's not impossible, but it obviously makes it a little bit difficult. Sometimes when you've got an upper-lower split or the long side, it's not as easy. When you've got a sort of deep one stand, it is a lot easier to get things going. But to be honest, I thought the away end yesterday, typical of many fans that went to Munich, came back broken. And self included, for example, was just on the water all game. So not really surprised. I think fans were just knackered. And I think sometimes you've got to give the fans a break. And also, as I said, the Wolves fans were really loud.
Yeah, it is a hard ground to go to and make yourselves heard. As you're right, Dan, because of them Wolves fans in that big end they've got. And we are spread out. I actually like the view of being a supporter of Wolves away. I actually like where we are, but it doesn't help us make an atmosphere, does it? So are you claiming the rights to the new Trossard song then, Dan?
Oh, absolutely not. It's not me. To be honest, I saw it when I was in Munich. There was someone replied to a already existing Trossard song with it. And a few of us lads had said, I wonder if a different one will get going out in Munich. But quite rightly took off at Wolves. So a good little song that, again, another one I can't get out of my head and has been in there all day.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. Now, we're just moving into the game, and first 20, 30 minutes, Fergus is thinking that Kivior looked poor again. Well, I don't know if I agree with Fergus there. I think that we've got a really good back four, and maybe Kivior is the youngest and least experienced of them all. So maybe he has to work that bit harder. Maybe does come down that side, you know, more than the other side. But I thought as a whole, our back four looked all right. Didn't you, Dal?
Obviously, Kivior, the only real error I remember him making was when he got beaten for when Raya made the save. I think he was caught out a bit too easily there. But overall, I don't think Kivior had a bad game, in all honesty. We can't forget, right? This is his first full season in proper football, really, in as far as them terms go, like this sort of competitive level. And he's still very young. So I don't begrudge him making small errors and things, because I've got the... I'm safe in the knowledge that he's going to learn from them errors. He's going to get better as time goes on. And those around him pick him up as well. So I wouldn't focus too much on Kivior's performance, in all honesty.
Yeah, I agree, mate. I absolutely agree. I think that we've got them. When you think of where he was a year ago and where he is now, the improvements are massive, and they're going to keep coming. They are going to keep coming. So listen, right, we're getting to the game, and the first big thing I can remember is that big tackle on Havertz, and I thought, oh, that is not nice. Alex, was you watching it, mate? Did you see it live?
Yeah, I did. And my first instinct was, oh, that's going to be a red card, because, I mean, he slammed in with his studs up and quite high as well, just above the ankle. And, I mean, it didn't look much better when you watched it in the replay. So I think it's one of them where it could easily have been a red card. And if it was a red card, nobody would have said anything. But yeah, it is what it is. And then the annoying thing was that he didn't bring back the play, and Rice had to retaliate and take a yellow card to get the game stopped. So that was probably the most annoying thing about it.
Yeah. I can't remember ever seeing that before, where a player's actually took a yellow card to stop the game because the ref's not going to bother. Yeah. And I just saw a comment there. I'm sorry, I can't remember who it was, because, as I say, I'm not working the comments tonight. But we've actually got four centre-halves playing across the back four at the moment, haven't we? You know, we've got four centre-halves, and I'll stick with them all year round. So then, the goal, right? The best time to get a goal is just before half-time, right? Of that, there is absolutely no doubt. And I don't know about you, Dan, but we're in the ground, but I thought Jesus was absolutely superb in getting up on his feet after he'd been tackled and making that pass to Trossard.
Being honest, I thought, other than the issues of putting the ball in the back of the net, I thought he showed what he's about in that game. And he had many moments, for example, where he took the ball out of the air on his chest or controlled the ball, took the ball down, turned, ran at the back four, and just brought us up the pitch. And if you remember, there was a few games, I think Bournemouth being one at the beginning of last year, and he did a very similar thing where he was just able to take the ball out of the air. And if he can keep doing that, I think we'll get enough goals elsewhere. So for me, he had a good game. He just needs to still do what a striker does and put the ball in the net, which hopefully is coming.
Yeah, exactly. We see, we can't agree all the time, Dan. You know, people start talking about us. I love to see Jesus in the side, right? But I don't like to see him play through the middle. And I thought that showed, when he goes out to them wide places, the ball control he's got at his feet is astonishing. And he can work his way into the box and set up a striker. That's how I see Jesus, you know. How do you see Jesus? We sign a striker next year, a big-name striker, Dale, right? Does Jesus still play on the side, mate?
I think you have to have that conversation with Jesus. I think that many people agree that he's better out wide than what he is through the middle. He doesn't score enough to be out there, but he's, as you mentioned, he's fantastic with the ball at his feet. Saturday just shows that, his tenacity to keep going and really push that. There's been talk of needing cover for Saka and Martinelli. I think the answer's right under our nose to an extent. I think Jesus can play on the left or the right. I really wouldn't focus on spending money. They're talking 60, 65 million for Elise, I'm seeing this week in the comment, in the media. I don't know if we need a winger, truth be told. I'd have that conversation with Jesus, and I think Arteta knows that as well, because he's seen what he brings when he's out wide. And I think the answer's there under our noses. I'd still spend on a striker, truth be told, but I'd keep Jesus. There's a lot of people saying sell Jesus, so I probably wouldn't. Obviously, we'll probably talk about transfers later on down the line and on another show, but I'd sell Eddie by all means, but I'd keep Jesus 100%, 100%.
Dale, I'm sorry I had to ask you that question, mate, but Jesus wasn't available tonight, so we've had to have you on, mate, to answer the question. But you're exactly right. I don't want to see Jesus leave the club. I think Jesus gives us another option in the Martinelli Saka mode, you know, Trossard, Jesus. The four of them fall into the same mold for me, you know, and I want to see something a bit different. Like Havertz was giving us it up front, but I think we need a big striker. So the goal, Alex, how weird did that finish look from Trossard? Did he mean it?
I mean, I thought it was just pure instincts from him. I've played quite a bit of futsal, and it looked like a finish that you see in futsal, indoors football, where you just poke your toe and hope for the best. And then it went straight into the top corner. And I'm quite adamant about Trossard being our best finisher in the club. I think the stats probably show it as well. He's a lethal finisher on both feet, outside, inside the box. Just get the ball to Trossard because he'll finish the chances. And yeah, he's on to 9 goals now in the season, and he just keeps proving that he was a tremendous, bargain, because he's probably worth double the price now. And yeah, I'm just happy that we didn't get that guy, the Ukrainian guy in Chelsea, because Trossard's miles ahead of his level at the moment.
Oh, Alex, his leaps shoulders above the level. But maybe that, in fairness to the lad at Chelsea, maybe that's more the club than him. You know what I mean?
yeah.
But, you know, so I thought we deserved to go in all right at 1-0 at half time. I was very happy. As
crucial, yeah.
As Dan said just now, I think it was Dan or one of you boys said, we had the save from Raya where he put it onto the bar. And then I didn't feel that we were under any pressure. And I thought that after half time, scoring that goal just before half time, I thought that the crowd might quieten down a bit. But that didn't seem to be the case watching on the telly, Dan.
No, absolutely not. I mean, just before we move on that goal, for me, absolutely no fluke. And I'll tell you why. It reminded me of the goal he scored against Everton earlier in the season in the 1-0.
Yeah, I think it's got very that similar.
Similar position, similar type finish. So for me, Trossard again, ole, ole.
Sorry, boys. I should have put that question around. What did you think, Dal?
Well, can I just say one thing before I answer that question? For those who don't realise, Trev is actually watching the Arsenal under-21s. If you ever see him start doing that, he's not just looking into space and just staring around like he's lost a pot. He's got the under-21s game. I keep forgetting myself. I'm like, Trev, what are you looking at? But but did he mean the goal? I think he did, yeah. I mean, why else would he hit it? It was way too hard and powerful to have a cross. The ball went towards the goal and he hit it like he'd meant to shoot. So, yeah, 100% I think he meant that goal. If he didn't mean the goal, why else would he have done what he did? Yeah.
I absolutely agree with you, boys. I mean, I thought it was a half chance. He had to snatch it really quickly. But he's banged it towards goal and he's caught it dead right. He meant to score that goal without a doubt. As you say, I think that's the most goals he's ever scored in a Premier League season now, Alex, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. It is. Yeah, it's he's on his most goals in a season now. So yeah, it just shows how well he's been playing, and he hasn't really been starting all of the games as well. So I mean, he's had a huge impact of quite a limited amount of minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, agree. It'd be interesting to see how many games he started and how many games he's come on this season. He seems to come on a lot, doesn't he, you know?
Yeah, so, I think he's had the most goals in the least amount of minutes in the Arsenal Premier League history.
There you go. Oh, do you know what, man? I love the Arsenal in black and white. I love his comments because he's the Arsenal in black and white. And his comments are black and white. Of course he meant it. He hit it toward the goal, so he meant it.
Of course he did.
You can't argue that point. You can't argue that point. That's brilliant. So as I just said, right, we've come out after half time. I'm thinking the crowd's going to die down a bit here. Not a chance. Not a chance. They if anything, they got louder, I thought. But I honestly thought, second half, I don't know, we'll go to Alex first, but I thought we pressed the press a bit higher up the field. And I thought we controlled it really nicely, Alex.
Yeah, completely agree. I think we retained possession a lot better in the second half. I think the stats show that as well. We had a bit more possession in the second half. And our combinations and fluidity in attack as well, I thought was quite a lot better, especially on the right flank, which is our preferred way of attacking, is down the right flank with Ben White, Odegaard and Saka. I think we did well combining outside the area and getting that, especially Saka, into dangerous positions. We just lacked that finish and that second goal to close off the game. And that was the only thing worrying me, is that anything could happen at the point where it's just 1-0. And I think that was why the crowd was in it as well, because they could see it. I mean, they sensed something could happen. Luckily, it didn't. But yeah, if I mean, we were playing well and controlling the game. We just needed that second goal.
Yeah, absolutely. Boys, look, right now, I don't know what's going to happen here, right? But Fergus, I'm going to do it now. Ball account, Timber has just scored a worldie for the under-21s, right? So, Fergus, I know you can hear me. Stick it on the screen now and we'll talk about it. Here he goes.
It's going to be like a new signing.
This is unreal.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, my Lord. Ferg, just rewind it.
We need to see that again.
That's a goal you've got to see twice. That is a goal you've got to see twice.
Oh, I can't wait to have this guy back. Oh. And left back as well.
Oh, so, he listen, couldn't have put that anymore in a corner.
Listen,
did he mean it, lad?
We're just talking about how we seem to be stronger down the right, okay? And we've got that boy to come back in on the left. If you're not excited about what's happening, oh, my Lord, you never will be. Dan, where does he play when he comes back in, Timber? Where does he play? Left?
Well, do you know what? When we signed him, for me, I always thought, do you know what? I think he's going to take Ben White's position. But then Ben White came in and just absolutely nailed it again. And then, obviously, Zinchenko's slight drop-off in form. I think he's going to be on the left-hand side, to be honest. And I think it's going to be him that's the one that's inverting into the middle. So, look, for me, it's him and probably Tomiyasu that might be fine now for that left-back spot.
I agree. Heath, I don't know if I fall out with you, mate, but yeah, that's some rubbish you're talking there, Heath, let me tell you. You just have a look at that again and tell me you don't mean it. Now,
I think he's on the wind-up there, mate. I think he's on the wind-up there, Trev. But no, yeah, the thing is, right, if his left foot's any just as good as his right foot, he's got a hell of a player there. I mean, I'll touch on Timber briefly, because obviously we've only ever seen him once in the Arsenal colours, right? And that was at Wembley against City, where, if I remember rightly, I think he got man of the match, actually, in the Community Shield. But
he played first half in the first game as well. He played a left back against Forest, and then he got injured.
Ah, you're right, he did. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm seeing a lot of people questioning on social media over the. I mean, social media, I love it, but I hate it at the same time. How do we know he's that good? And we're not seeing enough from him yet to judge if he can get a starting spot. Give the guy a chance. Give the guy a chance. Some people are like questioning before he's even kicked a ball this season properly. All I'll say is Kivior, look at him for the last 6 to 8 weeks. Fantastic. Nobody had heard of him at the start of the season. Timber's another one who, yes, he's come from a poor league, in my opinion, in the Dutch league. But at the same time, we've seen he's got ability. I cannot wait for him to play a few games. But one thing I'm not going to do is judge him. I'm not going to judge him based on what we've seen so far. Like, I'm not going to sit and think he's the answer to all our problems because he scored a worldie tonight. But we've got to give him a chance.
I'll tell you what, that Guns and Yellow Ribbons in the chat talks a load of blooming rubbish, doesn't he?
Yeah, I know.
Who's he?
Yeah, I don't know.
Haven't we got a model of him somewhere, Dan? That Guns and Yellow Ribbons bloke.
To be sure.
Oh, there he is. Look. There he is. But for me personally, right, I just hope that Timber don't. Well, I know that the Arsenal weren't rushing back. The Arsenal were brilliant getting people back from injuries. And if he don't play till next year, he don't play properly till next year for me. Let's just get him back. We've seen glimpses of how good he can be, and I've no doubt he's going to improve us. But
I think back to the
win at Wolves, right? So we're getting halfway through the second half, and we've got the high press going. I wasn't in the slightest bit concerned that we wouldn't win that game. Not in the slightest bit concerned. I was sat there very confident. How about you, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, as I said before, I was confident, but I still feel like we needed that second goal to close off the game, because, I mean, corner, long throw in, anything could happen. And they brought on Ait Nouri, the pacey wing-back, and Sarabi as well. And I think that changed the game a little bit. He went on some good runs, Ait Nouri on the wing, which Kivior struggled a little bit to deal with. But yeah, I mean, looking back at it now, where I know we won the game, we were in control, and I can see now that there was nothing to be worried about at the moment. But it's just the point of being 1-0 up. I don't know how you boys were feeling.
See, for me, Alex, right, I agree with you. They were winning some ball. They were playing with some ball at Wolves, but they were having to play it all deep because our press was working. They weren't playing it far enough up the field to really concern me that much. And as the game went on, as I say, I thought, we're all right here. How did it look to you then, Dal, through your beer-goggled eyes watching the game?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that, I had to watch the game again to see what actually happened. But before kickoff and even during, to be fair, I mean, maybe it was a beer talking, but I expected to win that game. I think I went into that game, I wasn't concerned in the slightest. Sky were trying their best to kind of put the willies at people. And they said selected results, I don't know if you saw that. They said selected results from Wolves this season. And you're right, they have had some giant killings in there. They've took points off City, off Liverpool, off others as well. The thing for me is, there's two things. One, I think they had seven first-team players injured. Seven. Which says to me, we've got to go out there and do a job. And I was confident we would. And secondly, we're the Arsenal when we're in a title race. If there was nothing left to play for after that Villa game, then maybe we would have gone easy and I'd have had second thoughts. But I had no doubt in my mind we were going to go and win that game. The Wolves did not concern me at all.
Dan, you're in the ground. As the second half is going on, we're winning 1-0. We're at home thinking, yeah, we're okay here. We're okay. Wolves are not threatening too much. Is that how it seems to you, mate?
Honestly, I thought we come out second half really, really well. Felt like we controlled the game. I'd probably say up to 70, 75 minutes. I was very, very happy. I thought a second was coming. I thought we dealt with everything they threw at us, really. And then typically the last 10, 15 minutes, if you're only a goal ahead, dropped a little bit deeper, they put a bit more pressure on. But again, I felt that we dealt with it well. I was obviously a little bit nervous towards the end because as you close out with just one goal, anything can happen towards the end. But I felt we closed it out well. And the crucial thing was we kept going forward. We kept looking for that second goal and eventually we got it. So,
agree.
But that's the makeup of our team at the minute. But to answer a game in the chat, that 10-game rule for a medal no longer applies. That was an old rule. So I think now as a squad, you get a set number of medals per squad and you give them out based on, I guess, the number of people that played the most games in your squad. You'd give them that set number.
Fergus disagrees, look.
Yeah, Fergus is always wrong. So
do you know what else then? What else I was really pleased with? I was really pleased with the substitutions. I thought Arteta got it just right. I mean, when you can bring Martinelli on for Trossard, you're not losing anything there, are you? You know, and so I was really happy with that. But 10 minutes to go, I thought we were comfortable. And then just to compound my confidence, we bring Partey on for Jesus. So we've got Rice and Partey playing together. Yeah, and I love that combination. I love to have two of the three. I say it every week, don't I? But I'm going to keep saying it. Partey, Rice, Jorginho, two of that three on the field at the same time. And I'm more confident about the way the Arsenal play football. I'm going to come back to you, Dan, because you were in the ground when them substitutions were made. If you talk about the Martinelli for Trossard briefly, if you want, but what was the general feeling when Partey comes on for Jesus? Because that upped my confidence.
I'm never going to be worried if Partey comes on. For me, he's a top footballer, and when fit, he walks into that side still. So for us to be able to bring on that level of quality to see our game is only a good thing. Maybe surprised it wasn't Jorginho instead or as well, just being given sort of how well he's been playing. But Partey needs minutes. And in these last five games, I'd expect him to start at least one of them. So we need to work him back up to being able to play a full 90 and to be match sharp when he does it. So no worries for me. He adds something to our team that we don't have. I think he's a special player on his day, as long as we can get to that level.
I agree. I just wish these...
We're agreeing a lot, Trev. Something's wrong.
I know. Weird. We did it. Do you know what? What's we had wrong? A right up in Munich, didn't we? I don't
we
think did. We did that once, did we?
Maybe we've become best friends and now we agree on absolutely everything.
I even carried you home and gived you a cuddle. Oh, my lordy, what am I doing?
It was a special bromance, it was.
Yeah.
I need to get that image out of my head of you two having a bromance cuddle there. Can we quickly move on?
I want to bring you in, Dal, on the Partey thing, because it seems to be a bit of a split about Partey and I think that what he's had hanging over his head all season is tainting people's views, and people can have them views. Absolutely, they can, you know. What's your view on Partey, Dal? Firstly, on the way he plays when he plays this year, and do we keep him? Does he come next year?
Now, that second question is a completely different question. It's going to be a tough one to answer. What do I think of Partey? You may remember me about probably just before Christmas saying on this very podcast that I think on his day, Thomas Partey is one of the best in his position in European football. I don't know if any of you remember that, but I stand by that. And I think Dan hit the nail on the head there. We're agreeing as well, Dan. But I think a fit Thomas Partey walks into that team. I think the second part of that question is very dependent on how it goes between now and the end of the season. He needs to show that he can stay injury free. He needs to show that he can get back to the form he was playing at. And we're running out of time. If you'd have asked me a few months ago, I'd have probably said, I don't know, I'm more leaning towards letting him go whilst we can still get some value in him. But I think he can add just as much value on the pitch. If we can keep him fit and we want to take it up a notch, I do think he's the sort of player to come in and do it. When he came on the pitch on Saturday, I thought it was a very, very sensible decision. He was protecting what they've got while still not really neutralising the attacking threat that we had. It just gives us a bit more at the back, so I thought it was a very good substitution. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about the end of the season. Who knows?
So I also like the fact that if we've got Partey in particular playing or Jorginho, I think Rice becomes that little bit more inventive. You know, I think Rice just pushes up the field 5 yards and becomes a little bit more influential on what goes on up the top of the pitch, and I like that. I like it very much. But just to close out this then. The bloke with the biggest engine in a footballer I think I have ever seen in Martin Odegaard is still running flat out 94 minutes into the game and comes up with a winner. We all wish it had come 20 minutes earlier, but I thought we were the only team that looked like scoring. How did you see Odegaard, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, it was actually quite a beautiful goal because we played it out from the back and built it all the way up until Rice had it in their midfield and he drove it towards goal and then passed it out to Odegaard, who had his first shot blocked and then it came straight back to him and the keeper thought he was going to cross it into the box or something because he just stepped out and then he just somehow managed to bend it in between the post and the goalkeeper. Closed out the game. Like you said, maybe would have liked it a bit earlier, but I mean, perfect, and another goal to the tally as well. And he's just been so important. And like you said, his engine, it just keeps on running and running and running in the midfield. And yeah, you just know you're always going to get 110% from Odegaard, and he drives the other people forward as well. Doesn't matter if it's the first minute or 95th minute. Yeah. He's a real leader, and we're lucky to have a guy of that caliber in our club. He's one of the best in the world. There's absolutely no doubt about it.
He just never stops, does he? He just never takes a breath. You watch when the goalkeeper's got the ball, when the opposition keeper's got the ball in the first minute or the 95th minute, Odegaard's up there moving the press around, leading the press, left, right, left, right. I'd love to know what his statistics are for miles run. But so that goal, Dan, mass relief in the ground, mate?
Oh, hugely. I mean, when you're 1-0 going into the 90th minute, it's nice to get that second goal and close it out. But it was a smart little finish from him in the end, from that angle where he was. But he's a player, in my opinion, that doesn't get enough recognition for what he does and certainly doesn't have his name sung enough because he's our hardest worker in the team. He's our captain. He wears the badge with pride. And for me, he's deserved captain in that team in what he brings in terms of class, in terms of what Arsenal stand for, and most importantly, what he does on the pitch. He's energetic, he's encouraging the fans, the players, and his end product as a number 10, numbers-wise, is great, he's creative. For me, he's the perfect 10 for what we need, and yeah, I think he deserves a bit more credit.
After all. Fergus, if you keep butting in, I'm cutting you out. Cutting you out. That was very rude to Dan, cutting in like that. And now I've forgotten what the hell I was going to talk about. No, actually, I was just going to touch on the fact that it's interesting you boys mentioned captain, but some captains are very vociferous, aren't they? But I think Odegaard is proving that you don't have to shout and scream to be a good captain. You can lead by example. And boy, is that boy leading by example or what? He's just...
He fits Arteta's way, doesn't it? He fits Arteta's philosophy quite well.
Yeah.
Trevor, I think you've upset Fergus. Look, in the chat, I think that was a real, sad upset Fergus.
Look, I read it as a, oh, that's how I read it.
I mean, he's a, oh, to be sure.
Look at this then, boys. Now, look at this, right? Last six away games. Where is it? How impressive. Get that banner down, Fergus. Do as you're told. Right. How impressive is that, boys? How impressive is that, Dal?
Six clean sheets.
You know what, right? I love that. And I think before we move on from the Wolves game, we do need to give a special mention to David Raya as well, because he made a fantastic save at his near post. I touched on it briefly earlier. And as you see, I think he needs one more clean sheet to get the golden glove. So there was lots of question marks all throughout the season, even by opposition fans. Why, if something's not broke, don't fix it. Now, I'm not anti-Ramsdale in the slightest. I've never been anti-Raya. I love both, but the reality is we've got to give some credit to not just the defence here, but also Arteta, because Arteta, he knew what he wanted and he went out and got it. It was quite clear. And I think Ray has proved a lot of the doubters wrong. So that save on Saturday was crucial. It was massive. If that goes in, it's a different game.
What can I say? Me and Arteta, we knew from the start.
Yeah. And in fairness, Dan, you did. You called it very early in the day. You called it before the season started, actually, in fairness. I hate you for it, but you were right, mate. And we're all having to eat a bit of humble pie. That don't mean we don't like Ramsdale. We're just realising that we've got a very fine goalkeeper in Raya. So go on, Alex. Sorry. Go on.
No, I was just saying, I think it was fair enough. Some people were quite sceptical in the beginning because he did have a couple of errors in the beginning, but the last 10, 15 games or ever since that Luton game, probably, he's just been so calm at the back. And it's not only the one save he had, it's his distribution at the back and the way he claims crosses. You just feel so at ease with him when he's playing.
Yeah, I mean, we can carry on briefly on it. Look at what he came into, in fairness, right? He's coming into... to a team that's got possibly England's best goalkeeper playing in it, yeah? And they put Raya in the team in front of Ramsdale. Put yourself in Raya's mind when he runs out of the Emirates for the first time, knowing that he's replacing the fans' favourite, the fans' darling, you know? Massive pressure. And as you just said, and I'll repeat it. I'm not sure I'm repeating it. Dan was right. Dan read it right for once. And, he sorted it out. So, look, boys, right, we've beaten Wolves, right? We've gone away, beaten Wolves. Side, maybe we're expected to beat, but also a side that are capable of beating all of the top sides on their day, and we've done a good job. So that moves us on now. The games are coming thick and fast. I've seen Pep moaning today about Man City's schedule. Well, that matches in no way to the Arsenal schedule. We've played Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday. It's massive. So what happens tomorrow then? Let's start with Dal, right? What's the team tomorrow, Dal?
Just briefly on that Pep comment. Pep's moaning about the amount of games coming thick and fast. City have 6 games in April. Arsenal and Liverpool have 8. If anybody's got a right to moan, it certainly isn't Pep. Especially probably because considering they've got probably the best 22 in the league, I saw someone say the other day, which I agree with. But anyway, that's a different story. Team tomorrow, I wouldn't change much, truth be told. I think there's certain players that need game time. I saw someone mention, would Timber be on the bench? For me, it's a definite no. But I would probably stick with a very similar team. I think it's a massive game. It's one I expect to win, but it's one where I don't think Chelsea will roll over like people expect them to. Chelsea have the ability to turn it on. They really do. There's a lot of talk. Is Cole Palmer fit? Is he not? I think that will be a massive influence on the game. as to because he's been their only shining light this season. But as far as our 11 goes, I'd like to see something very similar to what started against Wolves.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I am liking. Being able to tell Fergus what to do and he's not able to answer back. It's absolutely amazing. But yeah, Dale, as Dale says, Alex, Chelsea have... their form's improved of recent, hasn't it? You know, I'm not saying they're a class side by any means, but their form's improved. Do we win tomorrow? Comfortably? Struggle? How do you see it, Alex?
Well, I think it's going to be a tough game. And I mean, they gave us a tough game when we went to Stamford Bridge this season as well. We just about managed to get back through a Trossard equaliser. And I think Chelsea, they're quite far down in the table now, but I think they've underperformed massively, especially considering with the amount of chances they've had. Palmer's been really good, but when you look at their other attacking players, Mudrick, Nicholas Jackson, some of those players, Sterling as well, they've missed a lot of chances. So they've actually created quite a lot of chances, but they've just not been able to finish any of their chances this season. So, and we saw that against City in the weekend as well. They played really well. They just couldn't finish their chances. And I think if Cole Palmer's out tomorrow, that could be massive because he's the one player who's been able to finish chances for them. So that would be a massive boost for us if he's not ready for tomorrow.
Do you know what, right? I've been a big fan of Cole Palmer this season. I honestly think, for me, it wouldn't be an overstatement to say he's almost carried that side at times, Cole Palmer. He has been very, very good. And it is important if he plays or not, I think. But I just think we'll have enough. I think we'll have enough. And do you know what else gives me a bit more confidence? Seeing all them boys fighting over that penalty the other night, that says to me, what is Pochettino doing? What is Pochettino doing? Pochettino's got no control there. The players are running that club now because none of our players would dare snatch the ball off another player in front of Arteta because they know what they get, you know? So, yeah,
true. Dan, I mean,
you're going to be there.
They've got an individual quality, but not as a team.
Yeah. Dan, you're going to be there tomorrow night. Once again, I can't go tomorrow night. I'm gutted. It'll be the last one I miss this season, though. How do you see it, mate?
I must admit, I don't see as much of the loving for Palmer as a lot of people are giving him credit for. By all means,
I knew he wouldn't bloody last.
but by all means, he's done well this season. But he's been a big fish in a small pond. And I do think that's his level, to be honest with you. I don't see him being a star player for a top four side. I think...
Why?
Bit of a penalty merchant. I don't think he's as creative a 10 as you'll see. He is a bit more of an off-the-ball mover and probably a better finisher than a lot of 10s. But I think there's something missing with him to be top level and the X factor to be that sort of player that I don't think he's got. And I think there's a reason why Pep let him go. If he was that good, I don't think Pep would have let him go, especially with De Bruyne getting older.
What are you talking foolishness for?
Listen, you'll find out in 6 to 12 months. So for me, look, he's done well this season, but I wouldn't be raving until he's been doing it for 3-4 years in a row. For tomorrow, I don't fear Chelsea coming to our ground at all. I don't really fear anyone coming to our ground, which is why Villa was a bit of a shock. But we have to win our home games. We have to start quick and we have to be dominant. Chelsea away from home, I think, haven't won a game since the middle of February, since I think it was Crystal Palace. They've gone to places like Brentford and Sheffield United and still only got draws. I think they're there for the taking. And we've got to play well and do our job. And I think if we do that, we will fly past them.
Dan, you've done so well there, mate, not only by giving a good structured view on the game, but you also had to put up with the mad Irishman sticking his nose in again. I'm gonna chuck him out in a minute. He's gonna be gone. He's gonna be absolutely gone.
He's a bit like Man United. He's just trying to stay relevant, isn't he? But he's not quite, you know.
Yeah, he's like an itch on the middle of your back that you can't quite reach, isn't he? You know what I mean?
Yeah, you like him there because you can laugh at him, but you know, Man United, it's a bit annoying at times, and yeah.
He'll be fuming if you start calling him Man United. I'll warn you now.
That's your new nickname, Man United.
So listen, right, from my perspective, I can't see us losing to Chelsea tomorrow, but you know me, I'm the same every week. We'll have a quick prediction between the four of us on tomorrow night's game. Then I want to have a quick look at the running and see what you boys think of that. I honestly think we're going to score some goals tomorrow night. I'm going to go 4-1 to the Arsenal, me.
4-1.
Alex?
I think we'll win as well, especially at home and taking their poor away form into consideration as well. Hopefully they're a bit tired as well and deflated after the going out of the FA Cup. So I'll go with a 3-1 to the Arsenal.
3-1.
Dale?
I'm writing them down, so I'll let you go first, Dan. I'm writing all these down.
Well, I'm going to have to agree with Alex. I was thinking 3-1. I think we'll score a few goals, but do you know what? I still feel at home we can tighten up a little, and at times we look like we're going to concede a goal still. So, because we open up a lot more at home. So 3-1 for me, but maybe like a three goals at the start and then we let one slip.
Hopefully.
Hopefully we don't let one slip, but I think we'll win comfortably.
Same as last year, wasn't it? That was 3-1 at home where we scored three goals quite early and then Madueke scored towards the end.
Oh, better memory than me.
I'm going to go between the two of you guys there. I mean, like Trev, I think we'll have a three goal margin there. But I think it'll be a 3-0. I can't see Chelsea scoring, especially if Cole Palmer's out. And just to touch on something you mentioned, Dan, Cole Palmer said a penalty merchant. He scored 20 goals this season, 9 of which have been penalties, which means he's scored 11 from open play, including a perfect hat-trick.
That's a big old percentage, though, mate. Nearly half of his goals penalties.
It is, but he's a number 10, right? I mean, he's got 11 goals from open play as a 10.
Well, he'd have one less if half the team got their way, wouldn't he? God, that would be embarrassing to see him all rucking like that.
I'll put Ferg down as well. Ferg's put his prediction forward. Ferg's gone 2-0.
Yeah.
So I've got them all down there.
Yeah. All right. So, right. Anyway, that's tomorrow out of the way, right? And now this is where it gets interesting, right? Because we've got tomorrow. City play on Thursday, do they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we've got this, right? This is how we look, boys. I think we've got the hardest running by a mile, to be honest. Alex?
Yeah, unfortunately, I agree. We've got three home games in there. Liverpool've got two home games, so that could be an advantage. But even though I don't like to say it, I think Tottenham and United away, they are tricky fixtures, and you never know what's going to happen in those games. Anything could happen. And looking at City, they've got Tottenham away, which they've struggled against Tottenham in the past, but then the rest of them are, they'll probably beat the rest of them. I think it's probably Brighton away and then Tottenham away where I have my hopes of City dropping points. And then Liverpool, I don't know about Liverpool. I feel like they could drop points any game because they rested quite a lot of their players against Fulham in the latest game and they didn't really play too well. They're a bit up and down at the moment. Hopefully City will lose points against Brighton or Tottenham.
Dan, I'm going to leave that up there, mate. You go. Go, Dan.
Well, it's taken 46 minutes, but I'm going to have to disagree with you all because I don't necessarily think we've got the hardest running. I think all run-ins are pretty difficult looking at that. You know, you've got Liverpool.
I so want to swear at you now, you knob.
It's been 46 minutes. We've done well, Trev. We've done well.
Yeah, we have, mate. We have.
Liverpool have got to play their derby against a team that's still fighting and a team that's going to want to ruin their chances, right? We've all three got to play Spurs. So that sort of negates that a little bit for me. We've all got to play them. And you look at the others, Fulham away, City and Liverpool both got to play them. Liverpool's just played them, but City have got to play Fulham. We saw how tough it was at times, even for Liverpool. It wasn't an easy win. our result there wasn't great. It's not an easy place to go to. You've got Brighton. We know how difficult that can be to go to. Forest are fighting for their lives. And they obviously don't forget last year took a point off City as well. So the away games for the teams still left, including Villa for Liverpool, were not easy. They've all got something to fight for, which is at this stage of season, the toughest games are the teams that have got things to fight for. The best you can play are the mid-table teams that have nothing. And genuinely, I think anything can happen across all three sets. So I would say I pick us pretty even there.
My only worry is we haven't beat any of the top six teams away this season. So when we've got two of them, I mean, we lost against Villa and drew against...
Who's the top six teams away from home? I mean, Man United's not a top six team anymore. So
traditional top six.
Listen, if we can't go to Man United with confidence thinking we're going to beat them...
Oh, we'll go there with confidence. I'm just saying we haven't won any of the away games against...
Hang on a minute, you two. Please. I'm not having this bitch slapping going on between you two, right? All I'll say is that we haven't lost at City, we haven't lost at Liverpool. I don't look beyond that now because it's the run into the title race. I get your point, boys, but City and Liverpool, we've been up there and got points and we've beaten both at home. We've got to go to Dale. Dale, I'll stick it back up, mate. What's your thoughts?
I'm a mix between the two. I don't think there's an easy running for anybody. I think everyone's got tough fixtures. In all honesty, I'm not looking at the other games. I'm looking at ours. I'm looking at ours and saying, right, if we beat Chelsea tomorrow, if we beat Tottenham on Sunday, that puts us in a massive, massive pole position going into the last few games of the season. We can't change what happens anywhere else. Yeah, of course, it's going to be tough games. It's the Premier League. Anybody can beat anybody. You see top beating bottom, you see bottom beating top. But the reality is, let's just focus on ours. I don't care what they've got. Beat Chelsea tomorrow, beat Tottenham on Sunday. We'll have this conversation next week with three games to go.
Okay, that's a fair enough attitude, though. I can't help but...
I thought the question was, who has the hardest running?
Yeah. I don't think anyone's got a hard one than anybody. I think they're all as hard as each other. Because forget the fixtures, you've also got the pressure. You've also got the pressure and the squads and injuries and everything else you've got in there. We've got more games than what everybody else has got. Liverpool have got equally as many. City would still be favourites. Of course they will. But I do believe that there's no easy running at this point. When you've got the games you've got, when you're five or six games away from a potential Premier League title, all three of them teams, none of them have got easy games.
Right. Boys, listen, let's put this to bed now because we've got about 10 minutes left and there's two or three more things I want to touch on. There's a couple of things that cropped up yesterday that I can't help but get your opinions on, boys. The first one for me is the Nottingham Forest tweet about the handball situation and about the VAR official being a supposed Luton fan. For me, I've seen so many mixed views on it today, but for me, I just found it really refreshing that for once the incompetence or the overconfidence of the PGMOL and their attitude to them never being wrong and they are the kings of the world is being called out now at a higher level. It's being called out by a club that have said, yeah, we highlighted that the VAR official was possibly a Luton fan and we asked you to change it. Why not just change it? Why do you think you're that highbrow that you can't just change it and then take away that risk of you being looked at in the wrong way, you know? Why not just use a bit of common sense? You've got all these match officials. Why put yourself in that position to be doubted? Dan, I'm going to come to you because you always disagree with me and it's important that we see both sides and get opinions on this now, mate.
I'm really, really of two minds on this because I do think you do have to stop clubs from questioning too much the officials because you can put pressure on an official. You've only got to look over the years, the likes of Ferguson that put pressure on officials and the influence you can have. So a statement like this could put something in the back of people's minds to say next week, hopefully against City, they give Forest a penalty out of nowhere. At the same time, you have to have the open ability to be able to question officials. And I think we're just missing the platform a little bit. And I don't know if you guys watched what Neville said yesterday, saying, one, he felt like, I think it was Clattenburg, who's working for Forest, should resign. One, I think it's ridiculous calling for another man to resign from his job. I'm not a big fan of when that happens. But he also said he felt like it should have been the manager that comes out, criticises them, takes a fine and sort of takes one for the team as such. And he said that's how it would have been over the last few years. Well, it's shown over the last few years that that doesn't help improve things. Because I do agree that decisions have got more accurate with VAR. But for me, it's got more unacceptable for the incorrect decisions to happen as well because of VAR. And we've got to have a platform where, one, the PGMOL have the right setup to say, do you know what, we're going to try and be as independent as possible. And how can you have someone that's a Luton fan on VAR for Forest and say that they're completely independent? I'm not calling into question that he tried to make the right decision, but subconsciously, having that situation is just ridiculous. That they have to do something about it, and they have to improve the quality of those decisions and make them more consistent, because so many of those were shocking, in my opinion.
Do you know what, right, mate? You've. I was going to move the question on to Alex now, but I was going to expand on it slightly and get Alex to expand on it with me. In that tweet put out by Nottingham Forest is come from the only club that is employing an ex-referee full-time as an advisor, whatever they call him, you know. So does that give that tweet a bit more backing? Does it make it a stronger opinion? Or does it make it even worse having Clattenburg there? I discount Neville and Carragher, because them boys have got no right to talk about moral standards about anybody, them two. And they've also, they can't be serious about one issue when they joke and laugh about everything else. Their opinions aren't taken seriously, Carragher and Neville, for me. They're the wrong people doing it. But when you think Clattenburg must have been in some way aware of what's gone on, if not, if he wasn't aware when that tweet was put out, he's certainly been aware of it since it was put out, and we've heard nothing from him to say that he disagrees with it or that he's worried about it. So what, Alex, you know, you're the intellectual one amongst us, you know.
Don't say that.
You're the one that has...
I'm nothing more than you guys.
You're this top journalist in the making. How does Clattenburg affect you, Alex, in your view, mate?
Well, I think you said it yourself. If people make that connotation that he's behind it or he backs it, that probably makes it more effectful to some degree. But I think the way it was done was in the wrong way. It was right after the game. And to be honest, when I read it, I thought it was a parody account, first of all, when I read the tweet. Because it's just, yeah, I didn't like the way it was worded as well. And it really questioned the integrity of, I mean, Premier League as a whole. And I mean, I agree with Dan, a Luton referee shouldn't be involved in that game. But apparently that's allowed at the moment. They have to declare who they support or whatever, but they can, there's no like connecting. I mean, a United fan can rival Arsenal versus Tottenham. Do you know what I mean? Like, even though he's a Luton fan, he can still officially referee or be involved with the game. But the thing I just want is more transparency from PGMOL and from the referees as a whole. I mean, in Denmark, we've got the referees giving interviews after the game sometimes. We could never think of that in England. I just like a bit more transparency, and I just release the audio straight after the game and be willing to cooperate in just being more transparent. Because right now it just seems like it's just a closed shop from the referees, and they're not willing to speak to anybody, and you can't question us. And yeah, like Dan said, we just need the right platform. It could be like a weekly show where they go over some of the decisions. I know, I think Michael Owen does it, but I don't think it's quite often. If we had that every week where we just go over the decisions and have the audio from the referees, that would probably make it more transparent. But for me, that's what...
An apology isn't enough, Alex, mate. They have to doing something to stop it. And an apology means sod all. And honestly, it does more than that. It just winds me up, to be honest with you. But
listen, sorry to cut you off, Dan, but I'm conscious of time. Alex, so I'm going to bring your point up in a minute. I wanted to keep that separate, mate.
We're
going to come on to in a minute. I wish I could come up with a long words like you, Alex. Connotation and integrity. I've got ifs, buts, and these are that I have. But you know, right? It's in what's interesting me now, right? Is that the tweet's gone out. I've just seen that another statement's put out tonight. I've not seen that, so I'm talking without knowledge of that. But my mind as a fan is that the PGML have been. MOL have been unchallenged. They've not had to really explain their situations. They've certainly not had to take retribution for their decisions. They might drop a ref out of the championship for a week and then he's back again. You know, that don't make him a better referee. But Dow, I saw it today on the television, right? Mike Dean. This is what hurts the PGMOL. Mike Dean, a referee who openly confessed that he kept his mouth shut as a VAR official to protect his colleague, which is exactly the opposite of why we have VAR officials. Mike Dean has come out today and said that Clattenburg and Forrest are disgraceful and that they should never do this again. That's coming from a bloke, as I just said, that has openly admitted that he bent the rules. He looked after his mate, yeah, when he was a VAR ref. So PGML... OL for me have absolutely no standing. For me, get rid of them and bring in another referee society. Bring them in for non-league. They're not going to be any worse for me. It's been awful. So, Dale, just you've listened to what we've all got to say, mate, intently. You've said not a lot. Sum it up for us, mate. What's your view? Where do we go? Where does it go, Dale?
I think it was Hensie I seen a moment ago put a comment up. It said, firstly, PGMO. Isn't accountable to anyone, and secondly, they have the backing of Sky. I think that hits the nail on the head. I really do. It's when they get a mistake, when they make an error, they just say sorry. As Dan said, that sorry is not good enough. There's zero accountability there at all. If it happens to a club, if it happens to a player, there's fines, there's investigations, and there's all sorts. But the reality is, in this example here, for a team like Forest, I completely get where they're coming from. This very much could be the difference between Premier League and Championship next year. And if you put a financial number on that, we're talking 100 plus million just for being in the division. So it has a massive, massive knock-on effect. I think the whole thing needs revising. I think it needs there needs to be a governing body that makes people accountable for things. I think they have to answer to... people say they don't have to answer to Premier League clubs. They should do. If they're... Or not necessarily the clubs, but there has to be a panel or a board or the Premier League or somebody. It has to be an independent body that consults with clubs, consults with other leagues, consults with other referees who go through a rigorous training. Because this isn't the first time, it definitely won't be the last time we speak about VAR. And I think the comment you mentioned before, Trev, about him coming out and saying that he protected his mate, this is never going to go away. Until there is some sort of regulation there, because they don't want to get their mates in trouble. They are naturally going to have a bias towards certain teams because they like football. They're in this industry. They've got to regulate it somehow.
Exactly. That, you see, Dan, Dale, you're right. And that's where the vicious circle continues with Sky TV becoming involved, because Sky TV actually pay Mike Dean to come on the telly and tell us how good refs are. And all we've got in our head is Mike Dean didn't do his job properly, admittedly by himself, right? And if a player came, if a goalkeeper dropped a clanger and the player missed the goal and the player went on air afterwards and said, well, actually, I didn't want to score the goal because the goalkeeper's a mate of mine. I didn't want him to look too bad. That player would never play football again, ever.
Hopefully Mike Dean's never reffing again.
And Mike Dean is on that level, in my view. So I want a one-word answer from you. Then I'm going to move on to something else quickly. Nottingham Forest, or someone within Nottingham Forest, put out that tweet. It's moved the goalposts massively. It's got us all thinking differently. Alex, were they right to do it or wrong to do it?
They were
one word.
Then no.
They were wrong to do it. Dan?
Right.
Dal? Dal, you're on mute.
Sorry, I think they're right to do it.
Yep. I think they're right as well. But just by the fact Alex has said wrong, just goes to show how we're all mixed up with these bloody referees and it needs sorting out, doesn't it? It
goes to show that Alex is wrong.
No, Alex isn't wrong. It's an opinion. We've all got opinions, you know? We've all got opinions.
Alex has got the wrong one, so.
They did it in the wrong way.
Listen, I've got two more things I want to touch on briefly, right? We've got to touch on it. Coventry, we've got VAR, right, ain't we? And we want VAR to be absolutely correct, right? So why is everybody getting the ump about that Coventry goal being disallowed yesterday, Alex?
Because of the goal, it was a last second winner in the FA Cup semi-final. And I think when it's such fine margins, even though it's offside, onside, people get annoyed about it because it takes away the spirits of the game. And I mean, well, next season we're gonna see semi-automatic offside. And I think when we see that, I think people will view it differently because then you can clearly see if it's on or off. Right now, it still looks a bit, you can't really see with the two lines. They look like they were on top of each other. You couldn't really see whether he was onside or offside. I think when we have the 3D image, like we have in the Champions League, I think that would have been different if we'd have had that for the Coventry goal. I think people wouldn't have questioned it as much. So hopefully that will help for next season.
So, you know, when they bring this semi-automated thing in, who's going to be the first commentator that drops a clanger and says, I think we've got a semi on here?
Probably Fergus on this podcast.
Probably Fergus on this podcast, yeah. But let's expand on it a bit more, right? Because I didn't want VAR. I was quite happy with seeing those decisions like yesterday made by the referee and linesman, right? I was quite, especially when VAR started going pear-shaped. But if you're going to force VAR on me, I want VAR to get it right. And whether it's an inch or whether it's a mile, it was the right decision. The line said he was offside. So I, you know, if I'm screaming out all season for VAR to get these decisions right and stop ballsing it up like they did with us against Brentford, wouldn't it? You know, then they've got it right. I can't argue that. I can't argue that. I'd be a hypocrite if I did, Dan.
I fully agree. They got the right decision. People are upset because it ruined a potentially fantastic afternoon for a big upset in the FA Cup. I get it, but they made the right decision, unfortunately.
Dale, come on, son.
For me, the tech isn't the problem. It's the rule. I think there has to... for me personally, I agree it was offside. Do I think it should have been offside? Rule. No. Again, I think it's the rule. What's the problem? By the letter of the law, yes, he was offside. But the question I would say there is his toe is offside. He's leaning the other way. There is zero advantage for the attacker in that situation.
How do you define it other ways? Because, I mean...
I agree. I don't know the answer, but I'm not paid a lot of money to find that out. I agree it was offside. I think people just got brought into the fairy tale giant killing rather than anything else. Correct decision, yeah. But I just don't agree with the offside rule.
Yeah. Correct decision. It hurts. You feel for Coventry. But yeah, I've been screaming all season for I didn't want VAR. But if we're going to have it, I want them getting it right. And you know, according to the technology, they got it right. Boys, listen, we're going to come back after this, but Ferg, can you just play the music? I need brightening up, mate. I need lifting. Now, he's frantically scrolling now. Where's the music?
I think he's processing because we've abused him all night.
Maybe he's not there.
He wants us to do it a cappella.
As I walk these streets alone, through this baroque home upon the barren fields of ivory, neath the stadiums of stone, through the turnstiles at the Angel, see the homeless on the green, from the Cali to the cross and every shithole in between. Past the church, the mosque, a crack den and the offie on the corner, see the brasses from the brothel that pretends to be a sauna. Watch the bedlam in the bookies, see the winners and the losers seeking solace from their sorrow in the local battle cruisers. Through the madness in the market, weathered faces turn to greet ya. Hello governor, how's your mother? You're right, son, be lucky geezer. Double ply and mash and liquor, a couple rosy lee up chap, or watch retired gangsters bicker every day in Arthur's calf. The little fuckers causing trouble for the causes make you smile. You meet your muckers for a couple, forget your troubles for a while. From the full nil to the hemi, all the faces are the same, cause the manner might be changing, but the people still remain.
That's it. I'm a bit happier now. So come on, Alex. This last point, mate. This is, and it is important. We've left it till now.
Yeah. I just saw a good friend of the show, Henty, he put up a stat earlier today. And I think we talked about run-ins, and I think I agree there's probably not much difference between the run-ins. But I think there's a difference in how fresh our players is. And Hente's stat was that Arsenal, we've had 7 players that have played over 40 games this season. City, they've had none, 0 players. Liverpool have had 1 player that's played more than 40 games. I think we've looked a bit tired over the last 3-4 games. Do we think Arteta needs to improve next season and be better at rotating the squad and trusting other players than the same 7, 8, 9, 10 players that he's done this season?
Dan?
I think I just agree with Alex, if I'm totally honest.
What?
I know. I think I just have to agree with you, mate. But look, I think that's what will come. I'll leave it at
it's
that.
Just it's a crazy stat, isn't it? 7 players over 40 games, and the others have had none and one.
I think we're on that path though, and it will come. But we have to have the right players at the right time that we're going to bring in, and we'll get there. But we're not quite there yet.
Dale,
exactly that. I think we're on the right trajectory. I get that out in one piece. I think next transfer window in the summer, we'll see a lot of ins and outs, and I think that will start to shape what we see going forward. And I think we'll start to see a lot more rotation going forward. I just don't think there's, I don't know, wrong wording to use. I don't think there's enough. I don't think he trusts certain players enough to fill in. And I don't think in certain positions we've got the ability to either to play at the same level as what their counterpart would.
Yeah, I agree. For my sixpenny, Alex, I think that we don't have the depth at the present time to have them same appearance stats as the likes of Manchester City and Liverpool. But we certainly have more depth than we did have. And we're on the way. We're building that depth. And I'm like the boys just say, it's the end part of the process. We've probably got 12, 13, 14 now that could start any game. Next season, hopefully, we'll come back and we'll have 15, 16, 17 that can start every game. And those stats will start to change because there is something in it. Although I do struggle with it when you think we've had 3 international breaks this season and we've had a winter league week break. So it's not, you know, they come thick and fast at the end of the season. They always have, always will. But I get your point in that it doesn't matter how we put it. If the Man City players have to play less games than us, then they're going to be a bit fresher.
That's probably why they always come in to such a good form towards the end of the season, because they keep their key players fresh.
Yeah. Listen, boys, thanks for helping me out tonight. Alex, I know I've gone a bit overkill with leading it. I do apologise for that. Some people have just been asking where Fergus is. As we said at the start of the show, Fergus has got a little medical issues at the moment. Nothing to worry about. But it did mean that he couldn't come on the show tonight. He's there in the background and he's bossing us about. We have this little private message system. And trust me, he is pulling the reins tonight, is our Fergus. So I wish Fergus all the best. And I've left it till last as well. Fergus has also lost a close member of his family this week. And I know he's off to Ireland back end of the week. And I just wanted to say that Fergus, all his brothers, of which I've been privileged to meet most of them now, and his family, my thoughts, I'm sure the lads' thoughts are with you all. And I hope it goes okay later on in the week, mate. I sincerely do. Guns and Yellow Ribbons, we'll be back on Thursday or Friday. And we'll preview the North London Derby. I don't know if Fergus will be back with us, so you'll have to take us as you find us. But he has said he'll do the adverts for us. But we'll preview the North London Derby and probably have a bit of a chat and a laugh about the other games. But to be honest, North London Derby, biggest game of the season. Why not spend an hour just talking about how many we're going to beat them by, eh?
I'm still looking for a ticket.
I knew that he couldn't keep out all night, right? I knew that he couldn't keep out. But Alex, Dal, Dan. Oh, and don't forget, next week as well, we've got a massive bit we're doing about our European tour. We've been to every, between us all, we've been to every European away game this season. It's ended two rounds too soon, but what a journey it's been. And we're going to have a chat about the highs, the lows, and the laughs. We're not going to mention the bar in Madrid, though, boys.
Might get some exclusive stories.
Boys, once again, thank you so much. I've found a button now. I've found the button now to play the exit music. So we'll see you all soon. Fergus, we love you, son.
Thanks for listening to Guns and Yellow Ribbons, an Arsenal podcast by Arsenal fans for Arsenal fans. Follow us on Facebook at Guns and Yellow Ribbons or Twitter at Guns and Ribbons. And remember to rate and review us too. Up the Arsenal.